I must say, after watching Norm's presentation and Carrie's, I feel pretty inadequate. So I don't know if I have 20 minutes. I'm very behind now, so I've got to get back to Washington State. There's work to be done. It's funny. Before I start, I want to tell the people in the back, I know it's full in here, but there's a few spots up front in case you can't find any places to sit. It's funny. I have a 20-year-old son, and my watch broke about a month ago, and I thought it was just the battery. I brought it in, and they said, nope, it was done. And I came home and was talking about it, and my son was like, who needs a watch? And I said, what do you mean, who needs a watch? I've been wearing a watch since I was five. And he said, you know, Dad, you carry a BlackBerry. You've got your personal cell phone. You've got all these, you've got an iPod. You know, why do you need a watch? And he was right. So I've gone without a watch for about a month, and I feel like somebody who just quit smoking or something. you know, I twitch. I look at my wrist repeatedly, and there's nothing there. And you know, just really a good example of how things are changing for all of us. And I must admit, you know, sometimes I sneak outside and look at other people's watches. So there's work to be done. I'm not sure if cold turkey is working for me. So I love Norm's presentation, and we chatted about who should go first, and I thought he's got great stuff, and so I wanted to make sure he went first. But I also, you know, I feel like the guy selling the wheel when Norm's selling the Maserati a little bit. But the wheel is still pretty important. It makes the car move. You know, the car, without it, the car would just sit there and rev. So you've got to remember, social media, they're cool. I love them. We have a Twitter site. We have a YouTube page. We have a Facebook site. My agency is very engaged in social media. But yet I think it's really important for people to remember social media is a tool to communicate. It's not the message. And it's easy to get caught up in having to have the latest tool, but not spending any time on the message. And in the end, the message is still what gets you where you're going. You know, I was thinking about it today. I'm remodeling my bathroom. Glenn and I talked about this a little bit. So I have a hammer at home, and I love my hammer, but without a nail, it doesn't do much for me. You know, that hammer just, you know, I can just stand there with my hammer, but I need the nail to make it work. So I have a couple of quick examples that I found on a website that's called Damn You Autocorrect. And anybody who's using cell phones and things to communicate, you've experienced some of this. But an example about where technology is great, but you can't forget the message. So the person meant to send, Grandpa bought me a corn dog from the deli, but instead sent, Grandpa bought me a corn dog from the devil. You know, small difference, but important. Your mom and I are going to Disney. Nice, simple message that a child might want to get. But it came out, your mom and I are going to divorce instead. Okay, and the last one, which I debated with myself whether this was appropriate, but I'm taking a shot that it is. It was supposed to be a message from a person to their boss. You know, are you going to be around today? I'll be around later. Unfortunately, the message was, I'll be aroused later. So, you know, it's just important to remember, technology is great, but the message is, you got to get the message right, okay? So, you know, those of you who have done emergency communication or risk communication, you've probably seen these terms before. I hope you have. Be first, be right, be credible. They're interesting because they're simple, and if you haven't taken a risk communication class or done any risk communication, I bring it up because as I think about communicating about immunization, I'm fully of the belief that it's risk communication, period. You know, there was a time when communication about immunization was sort of normal and typical, and you could put a message out, and people trusted what you said, and that was that. There was this inherent trust in government that existed. You know, well, the government agency put it out. It must be true. I'm sure you guys are going to be shocked in my conclusion that is so 2000 and something. You know, so be first, be right, be credible is a mantra that we all should have on any of our communication about immunization. You know, but the thing about credibility is we're not born with it. We don't get it given to us. We have to earn it every single day. You know, and I think some of the ways we earn it is being first and being right. So I had a discussion with my boss. I work directly for the Secretary of Health in Washington State. She's been the secretary now for about 11 years. And one of the things that she and I talked about was the importance of selling your message, not just externally, but internally. Many of you work for a secretary, a director, a board of health. You might report up to a governor eventually. And there's a lot of layers between most of us and that permission or authority to get our message out. And I asked her on the phone last night, you know, how does someone in a program sell something to someone like you? And it was a good discussion, but she kind of brought it back to the basics for me. Most of us have systems and tools in place in our agencies or organizations to communicate up, but many people don't take advantage of it the way they should. And that's a big mistake as far as I'm concerned. In our agency, we have something that's called a governor's alert. Basically, it's a note from our Secretary of Health to the governor that says, hey, this important thing's going on. You should probably know about it. Many of our programs don't take advantage of that. We have an agency of 50 or 60 programs and 1,600 people, and these alerts go every Monday. But there are Mondays where we have nothing to tell the governor. 1,600 people, 50 or 60 programs, and we don't think we have one important thing to tell the governor that we're doing. That's to me is a message in itself, by the way. So, but our immunization program is actually quite good at submitting things, and I want to give you an example of why that's important to sell it within your system. A few years back, when our immunization rates were not what we wanted them to be, our immunization program sent a governor's alert item. The CDC was putting out their annual, here's the immunization rates around the country and states. Even though the CDC doesn't rank them, the world does. So it was really clear that we were not in the top group, which is a pleasant way of saying we were in the bottom group. So we sent a governor's alert to our secretary, so she was aware of it, and to the governor. And people always have these thoughts of, oh, yeah, nobody reads that. Well, I'll tell you, our governor reads that. Our secretary got a note back within 2 days that said something to the effect of, wow, we have a problem here, and what are we going to do about it? Now, some people might argue, that's the last thing I want our governor to know about is how lousy we're doing in radiation. I would argue that, immunization. And I would, I've just been spending a lot of time talking about radiation lately, let me tell you. I would argue that that's exactly what you want your governor to know about. You want your governor to pay attention to what you're doing. You want your Secretary of Health to think your topic is incredibly important. You want them to be engaged in your work. Because as a person in my immunization program was talking with me, it's going to be there. You know, your program will get attention. So decide, do you want it to get attention on your terms or do you want it to get attention on someone else's terms? Speaking of radiation, so I was a slide ahead of myself. When I talk about being the credible source, I'm showing you this picture because it was an example of what I'm talking about. Most of you have been following the news, might have seen reports that there's concern about radiation from Japan coming over to the United States. If you live on the West Coast, the concern is probably higher than if you live on the East Coast. Although I think just as I was flying in on Sunday, there was a report out that Massachusetts had found radiation in their rainwater. So it's clear even that it's an issue across this country. So the earthquake happened on a Thursday, I believe. On Friday, late Friday, we began hearing more about the nuclear situation in Japan, and those concerns started to bubble up. I was on a phone call Saturday morning, 2 days after the earthquake, and it just became very clear that we needed to start communicating about radiation. My agency monitors for radiation. We have monitors in four areas around the state. Our radiation protection people were very clear that we were not at any public health risk because of radiation. But lots of people were starting to talk and lots of things were starting to gurgle. So we made a decision on that Saturday to get out in front of this issue. We have a monitor that's on the roof of one of our buildings. We quickly just put out an email and a short news release to media that said, here you go. We're looking for it. Come see our monitor. We'll talk to you about radiation. We'll let you know our thoughts about whether there's any risk. We'll show you everything there is to show you. We were all over the news that night. We took pictures, and this is one of them, and a rare situation, actually. We took pictures, and media actually used our pictures. Media who could not get to the top of our building used our pictures and put them on their websites. I did a live interview with a weather person on Saturday night talking about radiation in the weather. And I'm telling you all of this because we knew we had to be the credible source. We did not wait for someone else to come out. And as all you know at immunizations, there are scads of people who are willing to be the credible source instead of us. There's people who wear bunny ears for a living who are willing to be the credible source instead of us. We've got to never forget that, establish ourselves as the credible source. And you always have to keep earning that. It's funny, I've been married 25 years. I would think in my marriage, I'm kind of credible, you know, but yet I suspect at the same time, I could not say, you know, honey, I took you out 5 years ago, for goodness sakes. You know, doesn't that count? Aren't I credible? I'm a good husband. Aren't I credible? I bought you a birthday present in 2006. You know, we earn our credibility every day with what we do. So don't rely on that credibility you earned yesterday. Keep earning it day to day. You know, so I'm going to ask people to raise their hands if they've heard this or said this themselves. You know, anybody. Anybody who appreciates or watches news says this. The media only cares about the bad news. It's funny. I was an assignment editor for a long time. People used to tell me this all the time. You know, I have this thing. It's the clown's going to be there. It should be on the news tonight. And I wouldn't cover it. And they'd say, the media only cares about the bad news. I don't think it's entirely true. But I would also say, if we truly believe that, then why are we messing around telling the media, sending the media stuff about, you know, immunization rates are good in our state. Cover it, you know. Government working hard. Cover that. And then we're shocked when they don't, you know. I am shocked that you didn't cover this good news story about government. I'm never shocked about good news stories about government not happening because they typically do not. We do not allow programs in our agency to put out news releases about, as one of my colleagues would say, limp celery week, you know, be it diabetes. If you ever go online and search, I bet there's 10 different days today is. Besides being Tuesday, I'm sure it's limp celery day and say hello to your friend day and all those other things. That's not news. So instead of worrying about what the media does, accept it and play to it. You know, we had a what I'd call a small outbreak of pertussis in our state. Nothing like California, for sure. But we were seeing a spike in cases, and we had a couple of deaths. And we went out there and aggressively communicated about it because we saw that as a time when people were listening. They were aware of the issue, they were concerned of the issue, and they were ready to hear our message. If we would have went out with a message 2 or 3 months earlier that said adults need to get a pertussis shot, it would have been met with a collective yawn. Instead, we went out with a message that said adults need to get a shot to protect them from pertussis. When we had a couple of cases of young children who had died because they were not old enough to get vaccinated, and they got it from their parents or their friends. And it was a tragic situation. And I don't want to sound callous because those are horrible situations, but it's the time to communicate when people are ready to listen, and we did, and we had a lot of success with it. I'm going to kind of scoot through this, but this is the copy from, you just saw a news release. This is the copy from one radio story, and I've underlined a couple of spots. Babies under 2 months of age are too young to be vaccinated for whooping cough, so it's important that their caregivers get protected. Parents should not assume they've already had the vaccine. It was like we wrote the story. I was shocked at how much of our information they used exactly from the information we put out. I want to quickly play you a radio news story that also goes right down the same lines.
We're lucky in this state. Pertussis, or whooping cough as it's commonly called, is not the problem it is in many other places.
But there's one thing that's pretty concerning to us, and that's the number of kids under age one who've been hospitalized or have died from the disease.
Michelle Roberts is with the state's immunization program. She says babies between the ages of 2 months and 18 months need a series of 4 Tdap shots.
Each dose provides more protection, but kids aren't fully protected until they've gotten all 4 of those doses around 18 months of age.
Kids younger than 2 months cannot get the pertussis vaccine. That makes them especially vulnerable, which is why anyone around infants needs to be sure they've been vaccinated against whooping cough. But that's not the end of it. When kids turn 11 or 12, they should get a booster shot. For adults, the vaccine is now included with your every 10-year tetanus shot. A reminder, whooping cough is highly contagious. If you have a lingering cough that won't go away after a few weeks, call your doctor. More on our website, comonews.com. Herb Weisbaum, Como News Radio.
That news station would not have given us the time of day if we'd called about that a month before. We were all over the media on this issue because we timed it right and we realized bad news was an opportunity for us to communicate important messages, and we took advantage of it. I want to quickly go through a couple of other things. I want to encourage people to take informed risks. I underline the term informed because I don't want you to go back and say, I was told to take risks. I'm going to do something really stupid today. So take informed risks. We held focus groups about our flu vaccine program. We were trying to go out and do some public awareness about flu vaccine. We held focus groups and really listened to people and heard what they say. And they did not want ads from us with somebody with a white coat with a stethoscope around their neck saying, flu kills you, go get a flu shot. Most of them didn't even want to hear the data that we love to give. You know, if you ask public health people, if I walked up to most of the people in the room and said, do you have any data you'd like to share with me? Most people just this big grin on their face and are ready to start talking about it. This thousands of people die from the flu, this many people get the flu, etc. They didn't want to hear it. They wanted an interesting message that grabbed their attention about some simple messages about flu shots. So that's what we went with, but I say informed because we did focus groups. We tested lots of things. We even tested a campaign that said, you know, there could be something worse than the flu. You could spontaneously combust. And some people thought it was really funny. Some people did not get it altogether. So anyway, we tried to take informed risks, and we ended up with a campaign we call Wash Your Handsington. Corny, silly, plays off our name, and it has a 1950s-ish feel to it. So I want to show you the spot we did on this, because we ended up doing radio, because a lot of people still get their information off of radio. We ended up doing online because obviously people get their information online. And we tried for the first time, instead of doing a television spot, we did a video directly for Facebook and YouTube and Twitter. I want to show it to you. It's not your typical public health video.
We love soap so much we scrub for fun. We'll wash your hands in time. Yes, we are Wash Your Handsington.
Visit Washer Hansington, where people wash their hands, cover their cough, and get the flu vaccine.
This is the state of the evergreen and impeccable hygiene. We love it when our hands are clean.
Washer Hansingtonians are always friendly and germ-free. They love to give high fibers, not high fevers.
We cover our coughs, every single one. We are Washer Hansington. Yes, we are Washer Hansington. Washer Hansington.
Get vaccinated. Stop the flu. Brought to you by the Washington State Department of Health.
So, thank you. Thank you. So, my second part of that message is, when you take informed risks, have a thick skin. So, because while some of you like that, I'm sure some of you didn't. I want to quickly read some emails I received just to give you an example of why you have to have a thick skin. And I never knew there was so many ways to call somebody an idiot, by the way. Let me see. I'll start with the good one because it makes me feel good. I've never emailed anyone about an ad until now. Washer Hansington rocks. I like the message, the nostalgic style, the floating soap bubbles, money well spent. So I keep that one around. I made it in large font. I put it underneath the stack of the other ones. Okay, so here's another one. To put it blunt, I've been appalled and disgusted by your Washer Hansington campaign. The jingle is the most stupid and annoying thing I've ever heard. Every time I hear it, I must change the channel. What a waste of taxpayer money. Here's a favorite that if my mom were alive, she would love. Let me see. This is what my state taxes are for. This is the dumbest waste of tax dollars I've ever seen. I have to pay you idiots to come up with stupid stuff like this. And let me see. Another one. Cut this crap out. It has to be the stupidest ad I've ever seen. Before I finish, I work in a dental office, and we all used to look forward to hearing the Washer Hansington campaign on the radio. It's such a catchy song. We sing it, and the patients sing it, too. So, you know, I read you, though. You know, I'm airing my dirty laundry today, so bear with me. I read you those because when you take an informed risk, sometimes you get good stuff back, and sometimes you get stuff back. But I'll tell you what. We got stuff back, you know. People actually heard it and saw it and communicated with about it. I can't tell you the number of campaigns that you get involved with where you never hear anything. So being called stupid is better than being called nothing at all, let me tell you. So I'm running behind, but I want to pay you our radio spot because we ended up working with a radio station that does gospel music and has a very targeted audience. So, you know, after you're called stupid, you figure you got nothing to lose. So here's our radio spot we created for a gospel station, and it's with a group called the Experience Gospel Choir.
Visit Washer Hansington, where people wash their hands, cover their cough, and get the flu vaccine. Washer Hansingtonians are always friendly and germ-free. They love to give high fivers, not high fevers.
We love soap so much we scrub for fun. We are Washer Hansington. Yes, we are Washer Hansington.
Washer Hansington.
This is the state of the evergreen and impeccable hygiene. We love it when
our hands are clean.
Cover our coughs every single one. We are Washer Hansington.
Wash your hands.
Yes, we are Washer Hansington. Wash your hands.
Get vaccinated. Stop the flu. Brought to you by the Washington State Department of Health.
Thank you. We've had folks call the radio station where that was playing and say, would you play that again? And they're getting requests for our Washer Hansington commercial. I think about that when I read the how stupid can you be emails that I receive. So anyway, take risks occasionally. Take informed risks. It's okay. Before I wrap up, I want to show you that this toolkit, because it's very important, and it covers in much more detail many of the things Norm and I did. It's an immunization media toolkit that's being worked on as a partnership between the CDC and the National Public Health Information Coalition, which I'm very much involved with. It is really nice. It gets into some real practical ways to do the things we're talking about today, to use social media, to get your message out, to do some planning, and I think it's going to be very helpful to folks. Actually, I've had a chance to review this a couple of times, and I would say it's a toolkit that is far more than just for immunization. So folks, if you don't work in immunization or you know somebody who works in another area, I think they're going to find this valuable as well. You're going to be able to find it on the CDC website, and you're going to be able to find it on the NIFIC website probably within about 3 weeks from now, and I hope you'll go and seek it out and use it. It's a good tool. So I went a little bit over, but thanks for your patience today.
No, thank you both for two very excellent presentations. I think the campaign that Tim just talked about, if you've ever had to clear materials, you can imagine the challenges. And if you think about the communications and materials that you resonate and that, as that example showed, resonate with the broader world, they really are things that probably would be challenged in most communications clearance processes, because they are edgy, they are unique, but those are the kinds of things that go viral, that generate discussions, that get people excited. And so it comes with the territory in doing good communications. We do have some time, fortunately, for questions, and so if people are interested, we can probably take two, three, four questions. If anybody wants to step up to the microphone and ask a question, we can do that. I do realize we're the only thing standing between you and lunch, which is also the challenge. I'll take the moderator's discretion. And Tim, would you mind talking a little bit about what the clearance process looked like and what things you may have run into in that process?
Well, you know, one of the things I would say is part of my presentation connects together, because we have a credible relationship with our Secretary of Health, number one. So there was a little bit of a trust me factor that went into getting this approved. Another piece that was important in the approval process was having that informed part of it. This wasn't just something we said, we think people are going to respond to this. We had done our, as my boss would say, due diligence on the front end. We'd held focus groups. We tested our messages. We knew the struggle to get these messages out and the clatter of information out there, and we knew we wanted to stand out. But still with that, we worked with our emergency preparedness people, and let me tell you, emergency preparedness people have, this might be the only gospel emergency preparedness spot in the history of government, I'm not sure. So we had kind of a double approval process. I had to get approval from our emergency preparedness people, because this was using some federal H1N1 funds, and I had to get approval through our Secretary of Health. We also invited several communications people in from our local health departments, because we know if we get buy-in from our local health departments, it goes a long ways towards selling something like this in the state. So by the time we put it in front of our Secretary of Health and said, we think this is a good idea, we'd done research, it had been approved by our emergency preparedness folks, and we had the communications people on board from all of the major local health departments in our state. And so by the time it got to her, it would have been hard to say no. The other piece is, it's that relationship building. My Secretary of Health and I have worked together for a long time, and occasionally, not often, but occasionally you have to pull out the trust me card, and I did, although I got a little nervous after the 20 or 30th, how stupid can you be, emails. But for every one of those, she was getting approached by people saying, I heard your spot, I love your spot. And so that positive feedback certainly helped us hold on by our fingernails on the cliff when the campaign was running.
And probably a good reminder that you got to be careful in terms of how much weight you give to emails, good or bad.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Question? I
wanted to ask about the whole thing you mentioned about focus groups and all. I think this is a struggle. A lot of people don't understand that you've really got to test these materials. Does your department, you know, have a line item budget for that whole operation of focus testing? Do you have existing focus groups that are standing by when you have timely things that you need done? Do you outsource this to other contractors to do it for you? Just curious what you do in your state.
Well, I wish I could tell you that my estimate I'm going to give you is scientific, but it's more just based on my experience. We try to set aside about 10% of any given budget for the testing at the beginning and the testing at the end. So if I have $500,000 to do a campaign, I usually try to set aside about 50% of that, or excuse me, about $50,000, 20 or so at the beginning, 25 or so at the end. So do the testing on both ends. So I can't tell you that we have specific budgets for this work, but any time we have a communications budget, if it possibly allows it, we set aside money on both, on the beginning and the end. We contract with folks to do that kind of work for us, and right now, as a matter of fact, we're going to do some polling on Washer Hansington within the next couple of weeks, because while I expect the recognition of it to be sky high, because it was so darn annoying, most people can't forget it. So I expect the recognition of it to be sky high, but I'm curious whether people got the message. So not only are we going to ask them, did they see it or hear it, but we're going to ask them, what did you take away from it? And hopefully we'll learn from it. So I guess my best advice would be always set that money aside at the beginning for the testing at the beginning and the testing at the end. No matter how, you know, even if you got $20,000, a couple thousand bucks will buy you a little testing somewhere.
Hi, my question is for Norm in the social media conversation. So CDC has a Facebook page. Actually, we have multiple Facebook pages, but one is more general, and it any of the different centers at CDC can get something approved to post on that page. And when immunization posts, we have a very robust comment section afterwards. And so what I wanted to know is, how do you feel about the negative comments? I mean, it gets us a lot of, we'll say, press. You know, there's literally hundreds and hundreds of comments. So what are your thoughts about that when the response is negative? And I will say this, we have a number of people that follow the immunization stuff, and they will respond to the negative comments with very positive comments. So I want to ask what you feel about that.
You know, I think that there's value in the negative comments as well, because I think it gives your Facebook page credibility. You're willing to let those appear there, and if you screen them and if you take them out, if you don't let them be there, people are going to realize that, they're going to recognize that, and they're going to say, oh, they're monitoring this and they're not letting those things in. It gives it a balance. I think it really gives it a credibility, and there are people who have blogs, and I respond to them, and if they don't let that response get up, I stop reading their blogs pretty quickly, because I don't trust them any longer. So I salute you for putting those up there. I think it's a good idea.
Okay, just wanted to say two really wonderfully exciting presentations. Thank you. I think I'm sort of left back at the bus stop on a lot of these things. I don't text. I don't, you know, I do email, but I'm sort of still there. And so, Norm, you got your point across to me today. My kids are telling me that, but I'm just not. My question is, how do you manage all this information? If I sign up even just for the CDC alerts, they're popping up all day long, and I'm like, okay, well, let me look at that. And so I could see where if I also did that in my private life, you know, for all the different things that interest me, I could spend all day on my computer, which I can't do.
Yeah.
So how do you manage that?
It's a problem.
I didn't think there was an easy answer.
I'm going to tell you how I do it, okay? Now, I don't expect anybody else to do it this way, but I usually wake up about 2 o'clock in the morning, and I lie there and I can't go back to sleep. So I got an iPad, and I lie there in bed with my iPad, and I read my tweets, and I read all of this stuff, and you can do that without the lights on. So you're not going to wake up anybody else. Seriously, though, I think you really have to dedicate some time to it. It takes a little bit of a change in our lifestyle in order to do all of this stuff. But, you know, I was thinking about it this morning. I used to get up in the morning and spend an hour with the newspaper. I used to get up in the morning and spend 2 hours with the newspaper when I was reading the New York Times and my local newspaper. And I still spend an hour and a half a day doing that. I'm spending part of that time now at the Internet and less of that time with the newspapers. I just think we have to change. I think we have to...
Even Facebook?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny. Norm's exactly right. I think the thing that gets lost in social media sometimes, it's work.
Yeah.
You know, it takes real work and real time to do it. And I think they're great tools, but my office is struggling right now because we're trying to do all of that stuff and we haven't dropped anything else. And at some point, we're going to have to drop something. And my staff tells me every day. So you got to be engaged in that, but something's got to give, and I struggle with that every day.
You know, I worry more about, if I can just follow up on what Tim said, I worry more about the organizations that say you can't look at Facebook on your office computer, you can't look at Twitter on your office computer. Last week I was in Nebraska for the Great Plains Regional Public Health Leadership Institute, and I did a workshop for them. And I had several people from local health departments say, we are not permitted to do that. I think we've got to get past that. I think we've got to say to people, at least the people who are senior management in public health organizations across the country, you must know what's being said about you on the Internet today in order for us to communicate effectively. One of the biggest local public health agencies in America, and I'm not going to tell you which I'm not going to tell you which it is, it's one of my clients, does not let their own information office, public affairs office, on the Internet to read those things. And I keep arguing with them, we've got to open this up for them, and they just say, no, we're not going to do it.
It's funny, it feels to me almost like in some agencies, and I understand why this is, but in some agencies it's like, what are you looking at on your computer?
Yeah.
Porn? Well, that's okay as long as it's not Facebook. You know, I mean, there's really people are frightened by it, and it's hard. I don't think anybody's came up with the perfect place to be with it just yet.
Well, thank you. With that, we will close. And.